Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. This week, I feel like I'm 90% back to normal. Some of you know I was pretty sick last week. Anyway, I figure we can move right along and get things going with a short piece from an Illinois publication for the Royal Arch called Hiram Words. The piece is entitled, Was the Ark Hidden? By companion David A. Miley. General consensus is that the Ark of the Covenant was seized as spoil by the Babylonians and melted down. There are other theories. Along with marble tablets of Beirut, the copper scroll of Qumran, and the ancient sacred text from Ben Ezra Synagogue, the Mishneyot of Rabbi Hertz suggests that the Ark of the Covenant was concealed some 7 years prior to the fall of Jerusalem and plunder of the temple by the Babylonian forces under Nebuchadnezzar. Rabbi Hertz decided on the name Mishneyot because Mishneyot contained a section that had been missing from the Talmud's first section, the Mishnah. The Mishnah was written in Babylon during the captivity. The Masechet Kilim is the missing text and is composed of 12 chapters. Each chapter describes vessels which were hidden under the direction of Jeremiah, the prophet, by five holy men, Shemor Halevi, Chizkiah, Zidkiyahu, Haggai, the prophet, and Zechariah, the prophet, 7 years prior to the destruction of the first temple, in example, Solomon's. Because the dangers of Babylonian conquest were imminent, the first chapter of the Mishneyot describes the vessels that were hidden, including the Ark of the Covenant, the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the tablets of Moses, the Ushebdis, the sacrificial altar, the menorah, kalal, copper urn, containing the ashes of the red heifer, a red cow sacrificed under Moses, the ashes for which were necessary for ritual purification of the priests, and numerous vessels of the Kohanim. The second chapter of Mishneyot states that a list of three treasures were inscribed upon a copper tablet. This is the copper scroll found at Qumran. Using the copper scroll as a guide has turned up relics and large supply of holy incense in the natural tunnels below Har Habayith, the Temple Mount. Moving right along, next I will read you a piece called Wisdom, Strength, and Beauty. Wisdom, strength, and beauty. Triads are groups of three ideas or objects. Triads appear in nature, politics, and religion. To early man, the cosmos consisted of the sun, the moon, and the stars. He called them the natural elements of earth, wind, and fire. He could see triads in the three-leaf clover. He knew he lived in a three-dimensional world. In politics, the U.S. Constitution established three branches of government: legislative, executive, and judicial. And in religion, most faiths teach fealty to God, your neighbor, and yourself. All are arranged in intriguing triads of ideas. Let us endeavor to understand some of the power in triads both historically and for us as Masons. Before we become aware of triads, we think in opposites or dual concepts. Developmental learning theorists easily prove that infants learn through simple stimulus and response events. Touch a newborn's baby cheek. Her instinctive reflex will be to turn her head in that direction. She quickly learns to identify her mother's voice from all others. As language is acquired, knowledge can be gathered by asking why. After a child asks a question, she is rewarded with an answer. The pattern engages a pair of concepts or dyads. Even as we advance in learning, we make decisions using dyads by giving reasons for and against an action. A straightforward method of determining a course of action involves drawing a vertical line on paper and arranging the pro and con arguments on either side. Furthermore, Socratic teaching method trains students by asking questions. The students must provide the answer or else the teacher must supply it. Catechisms are similarly a simple teaching device for youth. The first question in the Westminster Confession asks, "What is the chief end of man?" And the student replies, "The chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever." The question is neat. The answer is clean. This is an uncomplicated style of learning for the young. But as men, we become more complex. Answers tend to include modifiers such as, on the one hand this, but on the other hand that. Dualistic thinking is insufficient for more advanced analysis. Socratic method tends to give way to Hegelian philosophy that was based on threes: thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Inspired by Christian insights and grounded in his mastery of a fund of knowledge, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel attempted to answer all questions, natural, human, and divine, using dialectical reasoning that swung from thesis to antithesis and back again to a richer synthesis. Two opposing forces resolve into a creature wholly different, like the cross-fertilization of two different rose bushes, producing a more perfect hybrid. Higher learning tended to use triads. Among the seven liberal arts and sciences are grammar and rhetoric. Grammar uses subject, verb, and an object. Three things. Adjectives are inflected into good, better, and best, also triads. Grammatical tense are conjugated into run, ran, and have run. Rhetoric is similarly infused with triads. A rhetorical comment is a phrase meaning tangential or unnecessary words. Yet expert rhetoricians reveal much about the persuasive power of words and ideas in orderly lists. In Latin, word order doesn't matter. In English, man bites dog demonstrates that word order matters. We remember that three things that abide, which are faith, hope, and charity. The order matters. The Bible did not say charity, faith, and hope. We remember from our French Revolution, equality, liberty, and fraternity, a triad. Providing citizens with equality and liberty produces the ideal of fraternity. Rhetoricians argue that the ear wants to hear the most complex at the end of the list as it finishes or completes the first two thoughts. Triads appear in many ancient systems of thought. In numerology, triads are seen as the combination of odd 1 and even 2 that sum to 3. 3 becomes a symbol of perfection in many ancient cultures and mystical philosophies. Threes also appear very early in geography and in geometry. We can find any location on a plane by reference to 3 points. Even anthropological artifacts reflect triads. From the union of marriage comes a child. The complication of three elements is needed to provide sufficient complexity to achieve an idealized perfection. Triads are also prominently employed in lodges and Masonic writings. Why triads dominate over dyads or quartets of ideas may not conclusively be known, but speculative masonry permits us ample opportunity to reflect on the reasons. Threes appear prominently in the lecture of the winding stairs as we are shown that the first three steps. They remind fellow crafts of the 3 degrees of masonry and the 3 principal officers of the worshipful master, senior, and junior wardens. We learn that a lodge is not singular. A lodge is not dual. It is plural, with a minimum of 3. Similarly, displaying of the 3 greater lights and the 3 lesser lights are central rituals of the opening and closing of the lodge. As the furniture of the lodge, they separately are symbols with meanings and lessons, but the fact that they are grouped into threes is not accidental. The 3 lesser lights are named wisdom, strength, and beauty. They are said to help make Masons better men. Naturally, we could have added other virtues to the list, patience, fortitude, or peacemaking, but the fact that there is but 3 draws your attention. The 3 greater lights parallel the 3 lesser lights. First, displayed on the altar, is the Holy Bible or scriptures from other religions. The Holy Bible is a collection of writings, histories, and moral teachings that provide guidance in our actions. They are sometimes known as wisdom literature. Indeed, one of the books in the Apocrypha during the intertestamental period is the Book of Wisdom. King Solomon is recalled as a wise king whose wisdom was demonstrated by story of 2 women claimants for a baby. Furthermore, that wisdom is symbolized atop the worshipful master by his hat, the crown of the ruler, who is wise. The square is the second gray light. A right angle is key to forming a strong wall or a proper column, a wall that will withstand the vicissitudes of weather and seasons. Being on the square is commended to all master masons. We are charged to follow rules and regulations of the craft and of the country in which we live. We see the square as a symbol of right living in our own lives as well as order in society. The senior warden represents strength. He is the strong supporter of the worshipful master, yet it is intriguing that the symbol of strength, the square, is worn as the jewel of the worshipful master. The third symbol placed on the altar is the compasses. We use a compass to draw an arc or a perfect circle. There is beauty and perfection in structures built with arches and celestial windows. Cathedrals featured rose windows over the altar, which were circular stained glass windows beautifully adorned for the contemplation of the glory of God. We are further taught a message hidden in the compasses to keep our actions within due bounds. Beauty is orderly, balanced, and under control. So too the junior warden talks of the arc of the sun as it rises to meridian height as being the beauty and glory of the day. Hence we repeat patterns of wisdom, strength, and beauty in three officers as well as the greater and lesser lights. The rhetoric of listing wisdom, strength, and beauty in this order places importance on beauty. Beauty is an odd ideal for fraternity. Yet beauty is seen as a resolution of life that is brimming with wisdom and strength. Men who exhibit wisdom and strength create harmony. Harmony itself is a characteristic of beauty in social settings, as it is in aesthetics. In the Aurora Lodge, a German-speaking lodge in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, the German word for beauty is Schönheit, which involves balance and symmetry as the beauty of a well-built structure. Perhaps we can visualize that a lodge filled with wise and strong men will produce better men in a manly sense of symmetry, strength, and beauty. The three degrees emphasize three stages of life. Our youth and adolescence are emphasized in our training as entered apprentices. Our manhood and useful work are keys to the fellowcraft degree, and contemplating our own mortality is vividly illustrated in the hieramic story for Master Masons. The posting monitors used by all three degrees today begin with three grand principles of brotherly love, relief, and truth. Meeting in lodges are designed to reinforce these three principles as we practice fraternity, charity, and virtue, three moral guides. Triads are used by lodges to train our minds. As we grow in understanding, we will tend to use more and richer triads. Intelligence, force, and harmony provide elegant synonyms used today for wisdom, strength, and beauty. Likewise, religion, law, and morals are pillars of Masonic teaching. By religious study and contemplation, we search out wisdom. By the force and rule of law, we establish strong and orderly society. And by inculcation of personal morality, we strive for beauty in our private and public lives. The lesson for us is that the triads used in our rituals and in our lectures are purposeful and helpful to us. Let us strive for perfection by becoming better men in wisdom, strength, and beauty. Richard D. Marcus, George Washington, 1776 Lodge, FNAM, number 337, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, January 11th, 2001. Next is something I have been thinking about adding to the show. So I decided for our 40th show, we would start showcasing a grand lodge from each state. This week, I want to start with Illinois since that is where I quote-unquote broadcast from. We will call this segment the Grand Lodge Spotlight. So this week's Grand Lodge Spotlight is Illinois. History of Freemasonry in Illinois from the Grand Lodge of Illinois, AF and AM. No one knows for sure who the first Freemason was to enter what is now the state of Illinois, or when he either arrived or passed through. We do, however, know that the first lodge was established in Kaskaskia, then in Indiana Territory, in 1805. Seven Freemasons from five Pennsylvania lodges, one Canadian lodge, and one New York lodge petitioned the Right Worshipful Grand Master of Masons in and for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and Masonic jurisdictions thereunto belonging for a charter on March 9, 1805, and were rewarded for their actions by the granting of a dispensation on September 24, 1805 for what became Western Star Lodge. Interestingly, it was referred to as a Lodge of York Rite Masons. The officers were installed and the lodge constituted on September 13, 1806. Brother Shadrach Bond of Temple Lodge No. 26 became a member by affiliation of this lodge on December 27, 1806. His son having already joined the lodge, Brother Bond went on to serve as its presiding officer in 1815 and again in 1818, the year in which Illinois achieved statehood, and he became Illinois' first governor on October 6, 1818 to December 5, 1822. Worshipful Brother Bond became Most Worshipful Brother Bond when he became the first Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Masons of Illinois. The Grand Lodge was formed by a small group of lodges in 1822 and flourished for several years under two Grand Masters, before ceasing operations in 1827, a period that coincided with the short-lived anti-Masonic national political movement. Though the records were lost, Western Star Lodge was thought to have gone out of existence somewhere between 1829 and 1835. Interestingly, it was still operating under the charter from Pennsylvania as late as 1827. How this allowed Most Worshipful Brother Bond to serve 2 years as Grand Master in Illinois is still a mystery. However, by 1839, Freemasonry was on the rebound in Illinois. Current Grand Lodge was formed in Jacksonville on April 6, 1840. Today, the Masonic fraternity under the jurisdiction of Grand Lodge of Illinois is comprised of more than 500 lodges and some 70,000 Masons, men of character from every walk of life, all walking together to build a better world. So, what state should we do next? Drop a line on our Facebook, Twitter, or email. This week's famous Freemason is Sir Henry Irving. Born February 6, 1838, died October 13, 1905. Christened with the name John Henry Brodribb, by 1856 he had moved to Sunderland, changed his name to Henry Irving, and began his professional career as a traveling actor across northern England and Scotland. He left Scotland in September of 1859 for London, and by 1871 was on the stage of the Lyceum. It was at the Lyceum that he began his partnership with Bram Stoker, and in August of 1878, when Irving finally took control of the theater, he made Stoker an acting manager. During his tenure at the Lyceum, Irving produced over 40 plays, an average of about two a year. His production of King Arthur, which had a score composed by Sir Arthur Sullivan, opened on January 12th of 1895 and ran for 105 performances at the Lyceum before touring the United States. On May 24, 1895, Irving received a letter telling him that Queen Victoria had honored him with knighthood, the first to be given to an actor. In October of 1905, Irving took the stage for the last time in the role of Becket. His last line on stage was, "Into thy hands, O Lord, into thy hands." Irving died insolvent that evening in his hotel. Irving was a supporter of Masonic charities, making regular donations to the two Masonic schools and to the Royal Masonic Benevolent Institution. He was initiated on April 27, 1877, passed to the degree of Fellowcraft on the 24th of November, 1882, and raised to the sublime degree of Master Mason on the 12th of January in 1883. He belonged to Jerusalem Lodge No. 44 in London. He was the treasurer in 1887. He was also a member of Savage Club Lodge No. 2190 in London, and an honorary member in 1904, of St. Martin's Lodge number 2455 in London. That's it for this week. I'd like to ask anyone if they have Masonic artwork, papers, tidbits, interesting articles, feel free to email them to us. Post pictures of yourselves and Masonic regalia on our Facebook page. Go nuts! Remember to find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at WhenceKMU. Email us and add us to your circle on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Stop by the website, wcypodcast.blogspot.com, for links to everything else, including Android and Apple apps, which let you listen to the show, streaming instead of syncing. Take care, everyone, and for What's KMU, I'm Robert Johnson. You wanna know that it doesn't hurt me. You wanna hear about the deal I'm making. God, and get him to swap our places.